Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Delighted to be here with you. Thank you for being here with us. We appreciate that you take the time with us. And in appreciation, Darren has arranged what I think might be the best Monday show we've ever done. This will be the high water mark of Monday shows. And second hour, Scott Hahn will be here. And we'll talk with him about his new book and about politics and modernity and all of that. And this hour, Dr. Chad Pechnold is here with us, and we're going to talk with him about politics and Christianity. And he's a professor of theology at the Catholic University of America, and he's currently teaching a course on Catholic political thought for the Institute for Catholic Culture. And if you don't know about the Institute for Catholic Culture, you really should check them out. They're doing among the highest quality work for the general public to enter into the intellectual life of the Catholic Church. It's being done, it's probably the highest level work being done anywhere. Dr. Chad Pechnold, thanks very much for being here with us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure and great to be with you again, Si.
And it's all right that I just introduced you as a professor of theology and didn't classify a particular area of theology.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were talking about this before the show that my official title is a professor of historical and systematic theology, which I don't like that title because it ties systematic theology to history rather than to metaphysics. And I think the old title of professor of fundamental and dogmatic theology is better because fundamental theology is really tied to being and not time. So, but that being said, I talk a lot about history, so it's not.
Do.
It's not inappropriate to call me a professor of historical theology.
But there's a way of talking about history, and I think this will be part of the theme of what we'll talk about today, as we're going to talk about politics and Christianity. Mm-hmm. There's a way of talking about history that makes history the reigning concern, and there's a way of talking about history that makes God the reigning concern. And we bend the knee too much to history, then we can very easily, as the modern historian has done, leave God out of the whole story.
Well, that's exactly right. And I, one of the classes I love to teach is on Augustine's City of God. And this is partly his story for us Christians, is that we actually have to have a theology of providence. Our understanding of history has to be driven by God's action in time,
wow,
not by time per se. And yeah. I think that's exactly the Catholic view. Otherwise, you turn history into a god. You turn time into a god, and you can't do that.
No, because we have a God. We have a really good God, anyway, we find all these sneaky ways to exclude him. You're teaching a course on Catholic political thought, and you do this regularly, in your various capacities. But this is part of what you talk about, and. Yeah. We wanted to talk to you in part, I have to confess to you, because we wanted to ground some of the political thinking of our Catholic brothers and sisters and of ourselves in the Catholic thing, because it's going to be a wild political year over the course of the next 13 months here in the United States.
Truly.
So, I mean, you know, I think at the basic level, Catholics know that that being pro-life is a fundamental part of the Catholic thing. But sometimes I do think we're a little bit led around by the nose, because we'll go with anybody who's pro-life. And sometimes scoundrels have taken, you know, that's just politics. Maybe in some places, they used to say patriotism was the last refuge of a scoundrel. In some places, the pro-life claim is the refuge of a scoundrel.
Well, I do feel that way sometimes as someone who's very involved in the pro-life movement myself, the babies end up getting a lot of lip service, but not a lot of defense when it comes to the knife.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating, because I mean we have had some wins in the pro-life movement, but your comment that we sometimes get led around by the nose, that is, we are so and rightly passionate about the babies,
sure,
that we'll take any hook that makes a promise. And I think we do ourselves and our tradition a disservice for thinking only about that issue and the candidate who seems to do the best on it. We actually have to have a deeper Catholic view of order.
And And yeah. if we do, that won't do any harm to the pro-life movement. It will only deepen and expand. There's nothing to fear from a fully Catholic approach to politics.
That's right. And you know, in a sense, at the end of the day, everybody makes a prudential decision at the ballot box about what's going to be just for the babies, and often it's bad choices at the ballot box. But understanding a Catholic vision of order will put us in a better position to make better strategic choices for those babies.
And I'm realizing, even as I enter into this conversation with you, that speaking the way I did, people will immediately translate that into the current political moment. And I'm not referring to former President Trump when I use the word scoundrel, not at all. I'm amazed at the success of the pro-life movement in his time. So I don't want anybody to we're going to talk in general terms about politics. And I really am not trying to use any signaling language, or I'm not trying to use any, you know, dog whistles or whatever they say, you know. I just want to learn from you, Dr. Pecknold, how to think about politics in a fully Catholic way. So where would I start if that were my project, if I were to say, I want to refresh my mind before this great political season that's about to be upon us with a fully Catholic way of thinking about politics, where might I start that?
Well, I mean, I think we have to break out of our liberal mindset. And I mean liberal in the broadest sense of, we have an order, whether you're liberal or conservative, and obviously most of us think of ourselves as conservatives, at least in my circles. And but the order that we've received is basically invented in the late 18th century. It's the seating mm-hmm. chart of the French National Assembly, with the left sitting to the left of the president and the right trying to restore some things from the ancient regime on the right side. And that's the kind of world in which we have built all of our political assumptions around. So I think the most important thing for Catholics is to kind of get behind that, to try to step out of the political world in which we think. And the best way to do that is first, I think, to return to the ancients, return to Plato, return to ancient Athens, because it's out of that Greek philosophy that Christianity really builds. You know, grace heals and perfects and elevates nature. And one of the things that Catholic political thought does is it heals and elevates Greek political thought and Roman political thought. So I think one of the best things that we can do is to go back to that and see, what are the fundamentals for thousands of years of thinking about order? For the classical world, the cosmos is something good. It's something that nature has an order to it. A tree has an order to it. You know, mm-hmm. A tree doesn't grow upside down, and you pay attention to how a tree grows. And it's good and it's beautiful. Plato talks about the cosmos as kalos, as something beautiful. And that reality itself has order and number and weight. And if reality itself has that, then the world that we human beings, as social and political animals, should also reflect order, weight, number. It should have a certain kind of structure to it, not one that we simply impose upon it, right? We don't simply say, well, we're going to create a social contract, which is what they do. In the modern period, they say, we're going to build the political system that suits the most powerful. And so I think, for one thing, we have to return to a kind of a metaphysical, natural law understanding of order. The order is something built into the structure of reality.
Sorry, please continue.
No, go ahead. Well, Christianity receives that, of course, and says, yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the reason why we do that is because God has made it. And God has imbued it with intelligibility. God has imbued the natural world with its laws. You know, in a sense, the Greeks built better than they knew in terms of understanding this about the world, that you pay attention to natural order. And the early Christians say, yes, you do, because the one true God made it. And when you do that, then you begin to get, in a sense, the blueprint, for happiness, because living in accord with that order is going to make you happy. And trying to flee from that order, or as Aristotle would say, trying to flee from reality, is going to make you very sad, you know. And you know, you look at this gender ideology that's in our politics today, yeah. and you see, gosh, that's seriously unhappy when, you know, young boys are being castrated and young women are having, you know, their bodies mutilated by surgeons.
Yeah.
You say, well, absolutely, that's correct. When we flee from reality, it makes us sad and it deforms us. And if it deforms the human being, then it's clearly deforming the social body, the political body too. Because the ancients also see this interchange between the soul and the city. If something is good for the soul, it's going to be good for the city. If something's bad for the soul, it's clearly bad for the city.
Well, okay. So here's the problem, I think, with thinking as a Catholic now, then, because I look at the world today, mm-hmm. and I don't think I have an extreme personality. Maybe I do, but it looks extreme to me. Like it looks extremely warped. It doesn't look kind of warped.
We live in the most perverse time.
So many Catholics will say the only possible response to that mm-hmm. is a radical, almost a revolutionary response to that. That this has to be a moment of radical rejection and almost a rejection of this very society that we live in. Whereas what you're proposing is Catholics actually come into the world of politics saying, what we need to do is build, we need to grow, we need to nurture. It's more like a botanist than a revolutionary, the Catholic view. So what do I do at this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think you lay out the options. I mean, I think, you know, we do have people who want retreat, who want to just sort of find their enclave and live their Catholic life. And I respect that on a certain level, but the question is for the love of God and for the love of neighbor, you have a duty to point to the truth about order and say, this is disordered. It's going to make my neighbor unhappy. Therefore, I as a Catholic have a duty of love, a duty to care for my neighbor by standing up and saying, no, actually mutilating bodies to around this fantasy about gender is actually going to make you unhappy, your children unhappy, and my children unhappy, because your fate is kind of bound up with my fate. And the church as well has always had this kind of commitment to say, actually the peace of the city matters for the church, and what we do for the city and how we direct the city. I think Catholics, you know, have for a long time in America, at least, you know, been committed to what Pope Leo called a strategy of ralliement, where you just rally to the nation and whatever the nation needs is what you rally towards, in hopes that you will convert the nation to Catholicism, right? This was true in the Third Republic of France, and this was true of a certain strategy in America.
Yeah.
But I think what does rallying to the United States mean now? I don't think it can mean rallying to the principles that brought us here, rallying to the principles that brought us to a kind of liberty of license in which people can just do whatever they want. That we cannot go back to those kinds of principles. We have to say the Catholic brings principles of order which are perennial, which aren't particular to the United States, which stand the test of time, and we can rally to the nation only in a sense by telling the nation to wake up, to see its illness. You know, it's again like you can't heal the cancer until you're naming the cancer accurately, until you're saying, this is the problem, these are the things which brought you to this point in your country. And so we have to abandon these things that brought you to this point and adopt older principles, better principles, more stable principles, principles which are in accord with nature. And
let's take a break and we'll talk about what some of those principles are. What are the principles that undergird a Catholic approach to politics? We're not talking particularly about your vote this year or next year, we're talking about in general, how does a Catholic approach politics? Our politics, clearly, everyone on every side has a sense now that things are terribly, terribly broken. Maybe that would be a moment to listen to what the church has had to say about how to bring wholeness to the body politic. We'll continue with that with Dr. Chad Pecknold right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning. He died in 1621.
To find out more about the Doctors of the Church, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. The whole world, I think, is attentive to American politics in part because we have a lot of warships. I mean, we can cause a lot of trouble for people, and we have. But we've also been very helpful to many people. So that both sides of that coin are important to the whole world, and for other reasons as well. You know, the American currency is in many ways the currency of the world. And there is this idea that certainly since the fall of the Iron Curtain, the United States took a preeminent role in the world. And whatever one may think of that, it is a fact. And so the whole world attends to American politics. And so the whole world knows that there is that American politics is a mess. So we're taking a little time before the wildness of the political season descends upon us to as I said before, try to refresh the mind with a fully Catholic understanding of politics, to remember the heritage that we have as Catholics, the tradition that we have as Catholics in the political realm. Dr. Chad Pecknold, professor of theology at the Catholic University of America, and also teaching currently in the second half of a big course he's done, Catholic Political Thought, over at the Institute for Catholic Culture. You were saying that there are principles that the Catholic might reintroduce to the modern world. That it's actually fairly recent that these principles have been replaced with the general liberal principles that followed upon the French Revolution. So what might be the principles that the Catholic might bring that the world might go, oh, that might be healing. Maybe we could use that.
Well, a few things. One is not really a principle so much as a disposition, and that's the disposition of hope that okay. We talked earlier that God acts in history and that things don't have to be this way. I think there's the danger of, you know, you already said, well, things are so perverse, things are so disordered in our country or in other countries, right? The ICC course that I teach has students from like 60 different countries in it, and they're all resonating with these things too. There's problems all over the world in many countries. And I think the Catholic has to have a disposition of hope that things don't have to be this way. Things don't have to be perversely ordered. They have not always been perversely ordered. I think that's a Protestant idea, basically, not a Catholic idea. You know, of total depravity, that the state can only restrain all these evil things. And I think the Catholic view has to be, no, that there's a goodness to created order. Obviously, original sin weakens the will, and we tend to do the thing that we don't want to do, as St. Paul tells us. We tend to disorder and decay. But we also have the resources by reason and revelation to order things rightly. And so I think the first disposition for the Catholic has to be hope. Hope for the land that we're in, hope for the place that we're in, hope for something to pass on to our children, and hope for an order which is at least friendly to the faith. I think this is the principle which comes out of hope, is that the Catholic works in the sphere of politics, and this can include the home, this can include the neighborhood, this can include the town, the city, the university, the nation. But that the Catholic is always working for an order which is at least on its way to harmony with the Catholic faith, on the way to concord with the Catholic faith, that it's an order that is not at war with the Catholic faith. When we look around at the perversity all around us, what we're really seeing is a disorder that's at war with God, at war with the Pope, at war with the Catholic Church, which is to say at war with Jesus Christ. And so we have to have hope that we can move the country, we can move our countries. I think that's the first principle.
This is not something that, the way you're talking is not something that's innately comfortable to an American, because we are deeply rooted in suspicion of power. And I always go back to James Madison's thing that if men were angels, there'd be no need for government. Or I'm paraphrasing, of course.
Yeah.
But I think it was Madison. It might have been John Quincy Adams that said that. But this is deep in our American idea of government, that government is bad and limited.
Which I think is not a Catholic view. I think the Catholic view has always been that you convert the king, you convert the country. That order is
all the way back to Clovis, actually worked in the case of Clovis,
or back to Constantine.
Sure, right? Yeah, right.
Back to Constantine, back to Theodosius, back to Clovis. You know, Charlemagne, King Louis the Ninth. The view is that that order is something that God has made, and that we can conform ourselves to it, and you can only perfectly conform yourself to it by it being baptized. What's true for the soul is also true for civic order. It has to be publicly oriented to Christ. And so the Catholic political instinct is to, you know, do exactly what Jesus said, which is to make disciples of all nations. He could have said, go door to door and make disciples of all individual souls, or go make disciples of all families. But he said, go make disciples of all peoples, all nations, all communal, socio-political entities, because our faith is not individualistic. That's Protestantism. Protestantism and liberalism is individualistic, and it believes in total depravity of order. And so we have to purge ourselves of those deeply Protestant and liberal notions, which have been communicated to us through our American tradition, but aren't essential to America. America was founded by Catholic missionaries prior to its, you know, constitutional founding in New England. So I think we have to not be shy from the Catholic roots of America, and we have to not adopt Protestant and liberal principles.
There also does seem to be something in the English with their Anglicanism. They talk a big game about depravity, but they live as if family is really good, as if community is really good. So there's the idea of America, and then there's the practices of the early Americans, and the practices were very communitarian in a way.
Well, it's interesting, you know, and this is what Alexis de Tocqueville observed, right, is that Americans lived better than their philosophy.
That's a very good point. Yes, right. And, but we're not anymore.
I think that's right. I think our problem now is that we've finally conformed to a bad philosophy. We've actually conformed to a liberal philosophy, and we don't live better than our philosophy anymore. We live as bad as our philosophy was to begin with. And our philosophy to begin with was still bound up with this departure from the Catholic Church. That's what broke up medieval Christendom, in a sense, was this flight from Catholicism that built up around Protestant nations who didn't want to be subordinate to the Pope. They didn't want to have to have the Pope intervene in their temporal affairs. And so that the world we live in right now is a world which has fled from the Catholic Church. And so, yes. And so we see right. the disorder from that. The disorder comes from that fundamentally. So the question for the Catholic then is, in order to make disciples of all the nations, you have to argue in public. You certainly have to argue about God. You have to argue about the faith. But I think you also have to argue about public order itself. And, you know, just as the soul isn't going to be happy unless it's publicly oriented to God, so is the nation not going to be happy unless it's going to be publicly oriented to God. We could, as Catholics, as 25% of the country, stand up for the Sabbath.
But we do we? Yes. Oh, what a wonderful point. Let's talk about a few of those practical things, because it will take it out of the realm of the kind of theoretical into the practical after this break. Ask about things like how to celebrate, build community by celebrating the Sabbath, that kind of thing, right? Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carlo Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carlo's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm fascinated by the fact that you went to the Sabbath before we went to the break, that in a practical sense that the Sabbath is an objective good. It's given to God, to his people, to his chosen people, but his chosen people are his means of transmitting his revelation to the whole world. So the Sabbath is an objective good. There was a time when there's nothing in the Constitution that would support the idea that the society takes a day of rest and honors God on that day. But that was our habit for decade after decade after decade. And then it went away. It went away. Go ahead.
In fact, there's probably more written legally in support of what are called blue laws, Sunday closing laws, Sabbath laws, than any of the things that we're crying for in terms of moral reform today. That there's a huge legal brief on why blue laws are constitutional, and so one of the reasons why I like it is because Sabbath observance in recognized publicly in law is a way of both a public orientation of the civic community to God, but it also has this rootage in our history, right? Because in fact most municipalities still have blue laws on the books that they just don't enforce anymore.
Oh, how interesting.
And so actually, I think this is an ecumenical point that Catholics could join with our separated brethren and say, let's restore Sabbath laws, because it has all of these advantages, which it privileges God mm-hmm. in the public order. It gives time for non-commercial time for the family. So it privileges the family. And once you've privileged God and the family, you're on a much better footing for public recognition of the sanctity of human life.
But
and then when you're advocating for a total ban on abortion, you actually have these other things which are supporting the thing that you really want to achieve, which is an end to abortion.
Yeah, right. If you put God and family in the right place, you have a context in which to discuss moral issues that does not exist now.
You have a much, much better shot at, you know, of doing things in such a, I'm all in favor of doing things by force. I think we should end abortion through executive order. And use whatever powers we can. However, short of that, short of the use of power, we actually need to be thinking about how do we build up a whole kind of political, in a sense, political evangelization, a political apologetic, to move the country in a direction which is friendlier to the faith and friendlier to babies and friendlier to families and, most importantly, friendliest to God.
Yeah.
That our order is not going to cease to be perverse unless it's somehow encouraged not just to stop the bad things that it's doing, but to reorient itself to the very cause of goodness.
Now, the many people will say, well, we've been liberated from those backward blue laws. I think many, many people would say that. But here's I'm not concerned with
would
those
they?
Folk. I think if you ask, let's say to me, the average person in America is a reporter on NPR, National Public. Well, that's not true, but they're not the average, but they represent a kind of median point in American media. And if they did a report on the blue laws, I can guarantee you that the tenor of that would be people used to restrict all these activities and now we have the freedom to do whatever we want on Sundays. That would be the way they would report on it.
Liberty of license, or they would probably report on, oh, but what? Why not Saturdays? You know, for the Seventh Day Adventists.
Why not Fridays for Muslims?
Why not Wednesdays? And and because we believe in this false view of liberty, how about we just pick any day of the week to be our Sabbath?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But that does not the person who would argue that, frankly, does not concern me so much, because there's always been that person in American society. What concerns me is that people like you and me who go to church on Sunday have been cowed by that argument. We believe that the just ordering of society means no privileges for God and no privileges for Christianity. We believe that. I'm not saying that we're being coerced into that. We have come to believe that.
I mean, it's like we were talking earlier. People come to live the philosophy that has formed the culture. And in a sense, I don't blame people for that, because we're sort of made as social and political creatures. We're sort of made to go along with what mom and dad want. We're sort of made to go along with what our peer group wants. We're sort of made to go along with what our party wants, what our community wants, so on and so forth. So on some level, on the individual level, I'm sympathetic, but you're absolutely right. We have bought. We've drunk the Kool-Aid of a certain kind of moral libertarianism, a moral libertarianism in which, well, whatever people think is good, they should do. You know, whatever their vision of the good is, what they should pursue. But there are objectively good things and objectively evil things. And the objectively good things are things that the public authority should commend. And the objectively evil things are the things which should be publicly prescribed. And those things shouldn't be up for debate. Killing your baby should not be something that you shout from the rooftops as an expression of your freedom to choose. There's no world in which killing your baby is making you happy and increasing your freedom. But we have to be able to say no to that person. And I think it goes for Sabbath, too. You're either going to have you're going to have some kind of religion. So you're either going to have true religion or false religion publicly proclaimed from the civic order. At least Sabbath is, in a sense, you could say it's neutral with respect to Protestants and Catholics, to it's even neutral with respect to Christianity per se. It's simply a recognition that we need rest and that we need to recognize God, and we need to orient ourselves in a way that we might share in his rest. And if we do that one thing, we'd be on our way to a recognition that there was something higher than our community.
It's fascinating to me that we settled upon that one, because that does highlight a feature of the kind of mess of the Catholic political mind in America. My own mind. I'm not saying as if someone else has this. This is, we're trying to live as good Americans, and we're trying to live as good Catholics, and we sometimes, I think, minimize the amount of the distance between those two things. Mm-hmm. We try to say, "Oh yeah, we can put all that together," and there is a virtue of patriotism, and we love our country, but maybe we can love our country and say, "Well, old habits were helpful," and the more our habits conform to a kind of naked individualism as expressed in the Constitution, mm-hmm. the worse our society gets, not better. It's not that we should remember that it was our old habits that made the Constitution work, not the Constitution that makes the country work.
Yeah, and I think there's a whole lot of things in the American deposit, including the Constitution, that would work better with a Catholic political philosophy than with the liberal political philosophy that has often informed it and deformed it.
Yeah.
And I think the Catholic needs to be confident about that, needs to be confident that the Catholic wisdom that created Christendom, for crying out loud, created Christendom. We should be proud that Christendom perfect? Was it utopia? Was it free of all evils? No, but it was so far superior to what liberalism has created. Liberalism has created the devil's playground.
Yeah,
and we should be confident about the fact that, look, we're not going to go back to liberal principles and try to fix the problems with the principles that got us to where we are. We're only going to fix the problems that we have now by going back to the principles that created Christendom.
Yes, right. But this is one of the great, this is probably the greatest act of propaganda in the history of the world, is
totally.
That secularists have convinced even Christians that there was a Dark Ages where Christianity oppressed, like people actually believe that happened, and don't know that the greatest society ever built or grown, really. I mean, it's not even built. It's grown organically on a well-fertilized bed of Christianity. Up from that came the society that gave you the modern hospital, the modern university, the school system, literacy, women in positions of leadership, and
the cities that you still want to visit.
Right, exactly. All that. It's funny that we have this thing where if you go to Rome. And on Sundays, they take a walk in the street in Rome. And this beautiful mm-hmm. old tradition where you just walk as family up and down the street. Mm-hmm. We love beautiful. That when we see it, but we somehow deny it to ourselves as Americans. We say, well, I would love to live in Italy where, you know, they have these old traditions, and you have the beautiful Sunday walk mm-hmm. down the streets. But why do we deny it to ourselves?
Well, I mean, I think in part is your technology question from earlier, that we have kind of built our cities in a way which is already deforming us.
That's a great point. Yes.
Rome is built on, it's got the whole classical deposit, and then it's got the whole Christian elevation of that deposit, and it's structured in a way that has the piazza. It's structured in a way that has the big long walkways. It's structured in a way that is conducive, is built around the family and built around the small community. And our way of building is around choose your own little shop in a strip mall.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. Yeah, we've built our society around freeways and that kind of thing.
And so, of course, we can't live that way. We want to live that way because we know that's objectively
superior. It's better. Yeah, it's better. Right.
It's not like we decide we like it better. No, it's objectively better.
That's you're in big trouble. If you say that something is objectively true, that is an affront to my right to define my own reality for you
it's
to speak
It's so funny
that
you say that, Cy, because it's actually those who are most vicious in our culture right now for unreality that are certain that's an objective thing that you can choose any one of 54 genders.
Oh, that's a good point. Right.
You know, they are the ones who have confidence. My gosh, do they have confidence to stand up and tell absolute devilish lies to the American people about the absolute necessity of the right to sodomy.
Yes. Isn't that something that we lack?
We lack
the confidence. It does seem like that now I'm starting to see this as an underlying message of, if I talk to you about, okay, let's get to how a Catholic might function politically today, you're at root, you're saying, be confidently Catholic.
Be confidently Catholic. You don't have to deny being an American to do that. But you do, I think, have to deny those liberal principles that have brought us the devilish disarray that we see around us.
We've got to take a quick break. We'll continue our conversation on politics and Christian faith with Dr. Chad Pechnold from the Catholic University of America right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, when we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue. Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
At EWTN, we're committed to spreading the gospel from a Catholic perspective, touching millions via television, radio, publishing, and the internet. Right now, EWTN is looking for qualified people to fill a number of exciting positions. Make a difference using your God-given talent. Visit EWTN.com/employment today. EWTN is the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If it wasn't Scott Hahn, I'd say let's just blow off the second hour guest and we'll keep talking with Dr. Jeff.
Can I join the Scott? If I didn't have to take my daughter, I want to be joined on the Scott Hahn episode.
Yeah, well, that would be fun to do. We should do multi.
I want to do that. He's such a good friend, but also a hero. It's weird to be friends with a hero. I love Scott.
We just had him at our conference recently, and he did a beautiful job, and also strikingly humble. I was impressed with. I've had a lot of struggles in my marriage, and we're very, very good friends now in our old age. But Scott Hahn talked about therapy in marriage, in his own marriage, and I thought, good for him. Don't act like this is all easy, and I'm Scott Hahn, the superhero. I was so proud of him when he talked about it. And it was incidental to what he was saying, but it was, I thought, very important that, you know what, we all need help. We all need...
Of course.
Yeah.
That's at the heart of our faith that we need help.
But if it wasn't Scott Hahn that's coming up next, yeah. I would just cancel the second hour guest and I'd just continue 2 hours with you. Because I really am enjoying this because... there's such a depth, and we only get to, even in an hour conversations, just barely touch on it. But there's such a depth to the Catholic teaching on politics and on our public life that has nothing to do with just bossing people around about who to vote for, but has to do about discovering your identity as a Catholic in public. That what does it mean to be part of this polis as a Catholic. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a couple things about the Catholic view of government. Yeah. One of them is there is a kind of American rugged individualism, which mm-hmm. in no way do I think is all bad. I don't want to imply that I think it's all bad, but I do think it has led to something that has destroyed families and led to greater poverty. And the two kinds of poverty, material poverty, but also spiritual poverty, both. This rugged individualism has harmed us. Mm-hmm. And so what's the role of government in, say, promoting family, in helping the poor to overcome material and spiritual poverty in the Catholic view?
I mean, the rugged individualism is something, you know, that it's hard to distinguish it from either stoicism on the one hand,
yeah,
or narcissism on the other hand.
Right. I prefer stoicism of the two, but I'd really like Christianity.
And it's interesting because Christianity, you know, Augustine says there's two cities, right? One which is completely ordered to the love of the self, all the way to the hatred of the love of God. And then there's another city that's ordered to the love of God, all the way to even the hatred of the self, that you would deny yourself entirely for this love of God. And I think the Catholic has always been on this side of against the kind of rugged individualism, the libertinism of the self, which says I must be my own maker. That's what Satan says,
yeah,
in his fall, right?
Right.
Is I must be the source of my own light. I must be the cause of my own power. And so Lucifer falls. The Catholic says, no, I'm a dependent creature. As Alistair McIntyre once, I'm a dependent creature. I am made to be dependent. Dependent from my very birth, on my parents, on my siblings, on my country. Our love of parents, Aquinas says, is the closest thing to our love of country, right? We depend on our country. That's why we should love our country. And so I would say rugged individualism is actually contrary to patriotism. And so if you really want to be patriotic for America, you should deny the libertarian kind of rugged individualism, even the stoicism, to the extent that stoicism is not making sacrifices. Real stoicism makes sacrifices for Rome, right? But our kind of stoicism is just ordered towards the self. The love of God and the love of neighbor, these are the twin loves that God gives us. He doesn't say, and love yourself especially on Saturdays.
That's true.
You know, yeah. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Do the things that you were wanting to. You really want this special thing, or you're constantly praying novenas for yourself. Try praying them for other people, right?
Yeah.
Try orienting your spiritual life and try ordering your active life for another. Mothers do this constantly, and this is why we love mothers, because they're constantly putting the needs of their husbands and their children ahead of their own. That's very Catholic. That's incredibly virtuous. And imagine if all the Catholics in America did that, not only for their families, but also for their country. And they put their own personal benefit to one side in order to work for the benefit of their neighbors. And that includes the conviction that it's good for their neighbors to honor God. It's good for their neighbors not to kill their babies. It's good for their neighbors to form families. And it's good for the state to support all of those things. It's good for the state to invest in the family. I just was in Hungary recently, and I was talking to somebody who has been working on family policy. And he said, you know, we spend, just like the U.S. spends 2% of GDP on defense. But when we were talking in our government, we said, well, what are we defending?
Uh-huh.
And that's a really good question. What do we, if we spend 2%, then what is it that we're defending for that 2%? Is it just the rest of the 98% of GDP? Or what is it actually? Is it just money that we defend? And the answer was family. We defend the future of our country, and the future of our country is with families that flourish. So we're going to spend three times what we spend on defense for the thing that we're defending. So they invest 6% of GDP in family formation.
Where is that? Where are we referring?
That's in Hungary.
Oh, in Hungary. Okay.
Yeah, in Budapest. Those who are making decisions are thinking. I think they're thinking. You know, it's a both Catholic and Protestant country, but they're thinking in a very Catholic way about this, which is to say, what's the objective good that we defend? You know, is it Zelensky in Kiev? That's not the objective good for us. What are we really going to invest in that's worth defending? And I think that's a pretty good answer, the family.
That's an extraordinary answer. And I have to say that it has struck me in recent years, and I'm probably so slow in realizing this, that the truly liberal society, that is a society that really is into the liberation of the self to be whatever the self wants, is a defenseless society, and it can no longer raise children without traumatizing them. Like when we think about our relationship with social media, and you say, well, children are being exposed to pornography when they're 6, 7, 8 years old. We should fix that problem. And people go, well, in order to fix it, you'd have to, you know, you'd have to almost get rid of all of this social media. And the proper answer would be then, okay, let's do that. But no, we act as if that's the most ridiculous. Why would we get rid of all of this? All we have to sacrifice is our children.
What's funny is they say that it's almost impossible to get rid of until you pass a law in a state and says we're going to have age verification, and then the pornographers say, "Oh, well, we're not going to do this anymore."
Yeah.
It's so funny because we believe every lie we are told about this devilish order. We have to stop believing these lies. It's not true that we can't stop porn. It's not true that we can't end abortion. It's not true that we can't restore blue laws. All of these things are true. We are only limited by our own imagination, by our own, I think, acquiescence to the perverse order that we live in. Shouldn't be acquiescent.
Right, because we take our moral instruction from the wrong place. And so the people don't say that you can't practically do these things, but you can't do these things and still be morally good if the moral good is defined as letting everybody do whatever they want. I don't have the right to tell anyone what to do.
That's right. And also I think we have tended to shy away from using power. We have tended to because we have tended to think that limited government is the way to go, we have actually let the liberals control everything and dictate to our children what is right. And we have, in a sense, I think, tended to cede that power to them by saying we don't want that power. But I think the Catholic has to stand up and say, no, actually, we would be better stewards of that power, and we would like to run for office. And if we have the gifts of governance and that we have virtue and holiness, and we want to pursue using power for lifting people's vision up to something better. Things don't have to be this way.
Boy, that is the Catholic message, isn't it? Things don't have to be this way. And they are this way in many ways because we have chosen the things, some of which feel really good in the moment, that make it this way.
They're all political decisions.
Explain that before we have to go. We only have about 30 seconds left, but what does that mean, they're all political decisions?
Everything along the line. I mean, the loss of blue laws was a political decision that was made at a certain point, right? Abortion was a political decision made by a small number of people in a powerful seats of influence in a court. All the decisions around pornography were political decisions to permit this on this perverse notion of liberty, right? This liberty of license. And we don't have to make those decisions. We can make different political decisions, and we should.
I told you at the beginning, Darren had arranged the best Monday show that we've ever done. I really enjoy these conversations with Dr. Chad Pecknold. I think we will continue to do them. If you have questions that you wish that I would have raised, then maybe I can raise them next time. Just shoot us an email to radio@catholic.com. We're going to continue a very important Monday with Dr. Scott Hahn, and we'll continue to talk about many of these themes with Dr. Hahn. You should check out the Institute of Catholic Culture at instituteofcatholicculture.org. to see what Dr. Pecknold is teaching, or just go to Catholic University and become a student there where he's a professor.
Here. It's a lot cheaper to go to ICC, but yeah, come to Catholic too.
Dr. Chad Pecknold, I'm extremely grateful. Thank you very much. I hope we'll do it again soon.
Me too. Good to be with you, Si.
Right back with Scott Hahn on Catholic Answers Live.